she said she didn't know how old she was when it allegedly happened. So they gave a 2-year time period from 1998 to 2000. There was no evidence whatsoever, no physical evidence. Like this case, my case, I think should be the prototypical case of one, you know, these cases to where people just make allegations. You can't prove a negative because unless there's cameras or eyewitnesses, you can't prove that you didn't do something.
And they end up going to trial. Ronis is convicted and sentenced to prison. And as you pointed out, I mean, here's a guy who has absolutely no prior criminal record whatsoever, had just received a medal in the Navy for saving someone's life.
This is Scott Reeder, founder of Suspect Convictions. Nothing is more reviled in our society than a child molester. Imagine being wrongly convicted of such a crime and having to serve 8 years in prison for a crime you did not commit. That is what Royez Durrell says happened to him. Even though his conviction has been thrown out by the Hawaii Appellate Court, he remains on the sex offender registry for the state of Hawaii. On December 19, 2002, Royez Durrell, a U.S. Navy sailor stationed at Pearl Harbor, was charged with multiple counts of sexual assault, which had allegedly occurred between the years 1998 and 2000. While no specific dates of assault were ever provided by the alleged victim, Royez was on active duty in the Navy and deployed for substantial portions of the time window provided by the purported victim. Royez's accuser was not unknown to him, as she was the daughter of an ex-girlfriend. Royez denied the accusations and further denied having any physical contact with his ex-girlfriend or her daughter during the years that the alleged assault occurred.
Officers came to my house. I was married and was waiting, was expecting our second daughter. And the officers came to my house with a restraining order. And so, I read the restraining order and it said, for sex assault of a minor. You know, I had knew the complainant because I used to date her mother. So I was thinking that this was kind of some payback from the mother. And I really, I was kind of confused by it. So that's how I first learned about it. That was in 2001. But I didn't get arrested until 2002. It was a year later that I was arrested for it. And how I learned about that is I had just, like I said, I had been overseas, Operation Enduring Freedom. We had just returned back and I was in line to be promoted. And, we were supposed to do an evolution and I was told that I couldn't go. I couldn't understand it because I was in charge of those evolutions. But they said I had to go to the sub base side. And no one would tell me what was going on. So they just told me to go and go to the sub base. And this officer was to escort me over there. He said, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but when you get over there, they're going to arrest you. And I'm like, arrest me for what? And he's like, they're going to arrest you for sex assault. So then that's how I learned of the allegations. So I walk over to this place and there's police officers, two detectives, they're there.
Two which detectives?
Police detectives.
From where?
Honolulu. Okay. They're at the sub base waiting on me when I got over there. So when I got there, they're respectful. They didn't, give me a perp walk. They just told me what they was going to do. They patted me down. And they didn't even really handcuff me. They just told me to sit in the back of the car and they laughed and they was telling me about the charges. So then I went to jail for about 3 weeks until I was able to bail out.
The allegation made by the teenager was vague, allegedly happening sometime during a 2-year period.
Well, they wouldn't give me an alleged year that it allegedly happened. She said she didn't know how old she was when it allegedly happened. So they gave a 2-year time period from 1998 to 2000. So they couldn't say what year it happened, what month it happened. Just pick a day within those 2 years. I wasn't told a time of year, a season, and, you know, I could use that for alibi because, like I said, I used to go out for 6 months at a time, 4 months at a time, and so I needed some kind of notice to say, you know, I wasn't even in the country during this time frame, you know, because you know you're innocent, and so you're trying to, you know, figure out, you know, when did this happen? Because I know I didn't do it, so give me a time frame so I could show you I wasn't even around. There was no evidence whatsoever, no physical evidence. Like this case, my case, I think should be the prototypical case of one of, you know, these cases to where people just make allegations. You can't prove a negative because unless there's cameras or eyewitnesses, you can't prove that you didn't do something. They're just going to have to take a word for it. But I did everything that, you know, you could do in a case like this. When I first heard about the allegations, I went to the police. You know, I gave an interview without a lawyer. You know, everything they say, if you tell the truth and if you didn't do anything, you don't have anything to worry about. So, you know, me thinking that that's how it is, I went down, I spoke to the police detective. At my trial, I testified at my own trial. But at the end of the day, the question was asked by the prosecutor, why would she lie? So that became the issue, was why would she lie? So when I talked to the police, you know, the detective, she testified at trial that I was cocky and arrogant. You know, I don't know, you know, many people who done committed a sex assault who's going to go into a police station cocky and arrogant. And then at my trial, at closing, the lawyer, the prosecutor said that I was smooth and I was a player, and don't let him play you. You know, so at the end of the day, it was her word against my word.
It's interesting to examine how the allegation came to be made by the girl.
She went to her mom and told her mom that she missed her period and she thought she was pregnant. So her mom wanted to know who it was, but she was afraid to tell her and wouldn't tell her. So the mom started naming names. The first name the mom named was her husband. Was it Nate? And the daughter said no. So the mom just was guessing. And then she asked again, was it Nate? And the mom said no. Then she asked, was it me? She said my name, the last name. And the girl just got quiet. She wouldn't talk no more. So her mom took her silence as a yes, and she went to the police.
It should be noted that according to court documents, the complaining witness in this case has maintained that she always has been truthful.
What was your relationship with this child? I mean, did you guys get along when you were dating her mother? How would you describe it?
We got along. It was great. You know, there was no issue. And that's another reason why they were so, you know, willing to believe her, because, you know, why would she come in and lie on you after all these years? Because this was years after. Well, this was a while after I had dated her mother. But the truth eventually came out.
According to court documents, the alleged victim in this case was having sexual relations with a man with the initial CK. According to defense attorneys, CK was a family friend who worked in the cafeteria at her school. She married CK 1 month after Royez was convicted, when she was only 16 years old. This information is significant, says Royez's attorney, Kenneth Lawson.
This was not disclosed to the defense. There is some evidence it was disclosed to the prosecutor and kept from the defense. And so Rylas is still at this point in his, he's like, you know, why is she lying on me? And without knowing anything about Chad, the adult boyfriend, it's just kind of hard for any defense lawyer and Ronis to figure out. One, I know I didn't do it, right? I know I'm actually innocent, but I still, for the life of me, can't figure out why this girl's lying on me. And they end up going to trial. Ronis is convicted and sentenced to prison. And as you pointed out, I mean, here's a guy who has absolutely no prior criminal record whatsoever. Had just received a medal in the Navy for saving someone's life. And so to have these charges, you know, and so there was no evidence, no physical evidence linking Ronis to having sex with the alleged victim. There were no eyewitnesses to say, yes, you know, Ronis was with her or, they, you know, nothing like that. There was no other, I guess you would call it corroborative evidence, i.e. where the young lady had told her friends, I'm dating Ronis. It was just her word. And so he ends up getting convicted.
Royez, who is African-American, said he also faced comments with strong racial overtones during the trial. Prosecutors repeatedly referred to him by the nickname Bull before the jury. Royez served 8 years of his 20-year sentence and was released on parole based on his claim of innocence. He has remained on parole and as a registered sex offender for the last 7 years, while his appeal has been pending. In February 2008, the Intermediate Court of Appeals granted Royez's appeal and ruled the circuit clerk should have awarded Royez a new trial based on his newly discovered evidence. Royez is now awaiting the state's decision on whether they will order a new trial or dismiss the case. The prosecution has appealed the case to the Hawaii Supreme Court. I remember the first day I looked into my oldest child, Grace's, eyes. She cooed and cried as she snuggled in the crook of my arm. It was humbling. I was a parent, and this little one depended on me. After her birth, I started eating better and exercising. I wanted to be there for her, and now her two sisters. But what if something happened where I was unable to be there to support her? Well, that's why term life insurance makes sense to me. I'm particularly intrigued by Haven Life Insurance Agency. You don't have to go to somebody's office or get on the phone to buy a policy. You can apply over the internet. It's quick, easy, and convenient. We buy clothes, books, and groceries online. Why not life insurance? Haven Life offers term life insurance coverage issued by Massachusetts Mutual Life Insurance Company, a 160-year-old industry leader. It's not only convenient to buy, but it's also affordable. For example, a 35-year-old woman in excellent health can buy a 20-year, $500,000 policy for $18 per month. But importantly, life insurance gives you the peace of mind that your family will be financially cared for in the event that you aren't there to help do it yourself. To get a free quote, head to welcome.havenlife.com/suspect. That's welcome.havenlife.com/suspect. Get a free quote today. Hey folks, I just started watching Shudder TV and I really like it. AMC Network Shudder is a premium video service super serving fans of all degrees with the best selection of horror and thrillers. Shudder's irrepressible and thriving community revels in all things provocative, evocative, and dangerous. From bantering with Shudder on social media and contributing fantastic, irreverent reviews to relishing in members-only perks such as exclusive releases and VIP movie screenings, Shudder believes there is safety in numbers. Don't be left alone in the dark. You can stream great thrillers, horror, and suspense for $4.99 a month or $49.99 a year. Shudder has the largest, fastest-growing, human-curated selection of thrilling and dangerous entertainment. It's the Netflix of horror. There are new spine-tingling thrillers, shocking horrors, and edge-of-your-seat suspense added every week. I like suspense movies. My wife likes horror movies. It's a good fit for our home. You'll have unlimited access to stream ad-free on your favorite devices. Devices like iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, Xbox One, Amazon Fire TV, Google Chromecast, Roku, and Android devices. Shudder has a unique collection of exclusive and original films and series, horror classics, and blockbuster hits. To try Shudder free, I said free, for 30 days, go to Shudder, shudder.com/podcast and use the promo code SUSPECT. Again, to try Shudder for free for 30 days, go to Shudder, shudder.com/podcast and use the promo code SUSPECT. One more time, to try the Shudder free for 30 days, go to shudder.com/podcast and use the promo code SUSPECT. You'll enjoy it. I guarantee it.
Folks, today we're joined by Christine Bunch. She is an exoneree. She served a number of years in an Indiana prison for a murder she did not commit. And now she has dedicated herself to helping other exonerees with her organization, Justice for Just Us. And she is a wonderful person and an insightful commentator. And I'm delighted to have her on board with us today. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you.
Well, you've reviewed the information I sent you on Roya's Del Rol. What was your impression when you looked at it?
Honestly, I'm still just shocked. It's mind-blowing that these cases happen and that people are stuck trying to dig themselves out from a wrongful conviction for years. I mean, the wheels of justice move quick when you're convicting somebody, but when someone's innocent, it seems to drag on to try to prove that.
And, you know, I mean, it's a complicated case. I mean, I didn't get into all the details about how everybody was related to everybody and everything else in this, because it's really hard to follow. But let's just put it this way. This family tree doesn't fork much. It's everybody's connected to everybody else in this case, and it gets very complex. But the bottom line was, this young woman, this girl, I guess it would be a better term to use, made an insertion, and Reyes denied it. And there was no evidence to back it up one way or the other. And he ended up going to prison based on just that. And I don't want our listeners to think that I'm unsympathetic in this situation. I don't know if I've ever shared this with you, Christine, but, you know, when I was 12 years old, I was sexually assaulted. And it is the most devastating thing that can happen to you. I mean, it's just a horrible thing, and I still deal with some of the ramifications of that 40 years later.
Absolutely.
But so you can't send somebody to prison based on somebody coming forward a couple years later and making an assertion. I mean, you have to have something more than a he said, she said. At least it seems that way to me, don't you think?
I agree. The hard part for me was trying to follow the family connections, and everybody is so entwined. the hard part is when a child comes forward and makes an assertion like this, no one wants to batter that child more or make them deal with more trying to get to the truth or trying to discover, did it really happen and did it really happen with this exact person or did somebody put them up to saying it? And with children, I mean, a lot of the time they're influenced by adults. So it's so hard to pick this apart. But I'm just left wondering why the courts went ahead and found him guilty based on her word alone, because there was no proof. There was no evidence. There was nothing.
Exactly. And I mean, and, you know, she comes forward and she says, well, it happened during this 2-year period. Well, but no dates were involved or anything. I mean, so how do you come up with an alibi or how do you come up with a response if you don't even know when something particularly supposedly happened? I mean, and this guy was a decorated sailor. He was at sea much of the time during those 2 years. But he couldn't respond and said, well, you know, I was at sea when she said this happened. Or I was at my best friend's house that day. Or whatever. Because it's this empty period. I mean, like, how do you come up with an alibi for an entire 2-year period? I mean, it seems so vague, it's hard to for anyone to respond to it.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any way somebody could say, oh, well, on this day I was doing such and such. If they're never given that day or that opportunity, I think that's what confuses me so much about this case was somebody said, well, this happened in this stretch. And how do you fight that? How do you build a defense? I mean, I don't think it should have ever went to court because there was nothing. There was no way he could build a defense to that. He doesn't know exactly when she's talking about, where the incidents happened, you know, what was supposed to have happened. Was there anybody else there? There's no way to truly stand against your accuser and deny those allegations.
And, you know, and there's something else here that we a lot of times feel uncomfortable talking about in our society, but this was a transracial relationship. Reyes is black. His former girlfriend wasn't. She was Hawaiian. Hawaii is about 2% African American. Interestingly enough, it's the only state in the United States that's not majority white. And some people will argue, you know, Hawaii is a very progressive state when it comes to racial relations. You know, they'll point out that Barack Obama grew up in Hawaii. They'll point out that it's really a melting pot, like a salad almost. It's really beautiful of all kinds of different races coming together from all over the world. And then I chatted with a friend of mine who grew up in Hawaii a while back, and she said, oh, no, that's a very Pollyannish look at Hawaii. She was Japanese-American, and she said Hawaii is very racially conscious, and there's even within the Asian community, there's a very regimented and hard and fast caste system almost of, you know, Japanese are at the top, Filipinos are at the very bottom, and Vietnamese and Koreans are somewhere in between, and, you know, Micronesians are really looked down on, almost the way untouchables are in India. And she said, and then, you know, other races, they fit in there in different ways, but it's not a post-racial society by any means. And what's disturbed me was, during his prosecution, the prosecutors repeatedly referred to Reyes as as Bull, as his nickname from his childhood. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, here's this decorated sailor. Why aren't they addressing him by his rank? But they're picking this nickname, Bull, which I think has something very much a sexual connotation. And frankly, I think this can have some racial connotations too, to address him before the jury as, oh, Bull did this, and Bull did that. And it's like, why did they do that? What do you think they did that, Christine?
Well, I mean, I think it's easier for jurors to believe somebody would do something like this if they create a different persona for them. So they didn't want the defendant to be sitting there, a decorated sailor. They didn't want him to be sitting there as somebody that jurors would look up to. So if you can chink that down and create a different persona for him, it's easier for jurors to say, oh, yes, of course he would have done this, instead of them saying, oh, well, this guy's a sailor, you know, and there's nothing, there's no evidence, there's only this girl's word. Maybe we need to look at this harder. I think it's a preconception that happens through all of these wrongful convictions, because prosecutors try very hard to make the defendant look like somebody other than who they actually are.
Yeah, and you might have a little better insight on this than I, but I mean, when he went to prison, he went in as somebody who had sexually abused a child. I don't know if it's the same in a women's prison or not, but are those particular inmates viewed differently within a prison population?
Yes. I mean, a crime against a child is the worst crime you can commit. So with women tend to get even in mean, malicious ways. They're not always as outwardly violent as men are. That's why there's so many fights and stabbings and deaths in the male's facilities. To come in with a child crime, you're automatically at the bottom of the barrel. And any inmate in there that thinks, oh, I wouldn't do that, no matter what crime they were there for, or anyone that has children, they're going to look at him automatically as a target.
So, I mean, he indicated to me that he had a pretty rough time of it going in with that on his record. And he said he got in quite a few fights. People were really out for him. I mean, I can't imagine what it was like to spend 8 years in prison with that on your tag. I mean, you're kind of a continual target the whole time.
Absolutely. And his survival skills are now honed deeply. And I'm sure walking out of the prison hasn't changed the fact that he's going to continually look over his shoulder and be expecting a blow to come. He lived with it every day.
You know, and he's just a success story. When he got out, he found a good job, and he's done extremely well, and he's established a family and done well. And that's despite having the record, and that's despite he's had to be a registered sex offender in the state of Hawaii since he got out. Even after an appellate court threw out the conviction, he still remains a registered sex offender, which I think is insane. And it's hard for me. I mean, when I Googled his name, up popped the sex offender registry for the state of Hawaii. You got to think that happens a lot to him, and he doesn't even know it. People who don't know him, like, in this age of Google, are looking him up. What do you think, Christine?
I mean, I think that's something that will follow him the rest of his life. Even if he's able to get himself off the registry, with our technological age, you can Google somebody and it's there forever. So even though I'm on the register of exonerees, you still Google my name and it's going to come up somewhere along there that I was accused and convicted of murder. So even if everything is cleared and wiped away, you're always going to have that hanging over your head, and there will always be a way for somebody to backtrack and look at your past.
So what advice do you give exonerees that have to deal with that?
The biggest thing is, don't lose who you are. You fought the big battle to get out of prison. And yes, you're going to have to continue to struggle and fight out here, because there will always be people that believe you're guilty. The important thing is not to let that beat you down. You've survived the worst. Once you get out here, the little things, they tend to set off our PTSD issues. They tend to remind us of prison. But it's important to remember that we've covered that hurdle. We've made it out. And we can change people's perceptions of us by the way we act and respond to the things that are said about us. So most of the time, just living with it and moving forward sets a better example than trying to yell at the top of your lungs, "That's not me. I didn't do this." There will be some people that just will never believe that.